Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Jonathan Chait, who is a writer for the New York Magazine. He has extensively profiled Paul Ryan, who was just chosen by Mitt Romney as his vice president on the Romney-Ryan R&R ticket. We will discuss why someone who has been a Washington insider with little to no experience in the public sector, who voted for TARP and the budget-busting prescription drug bill, is the darling of the Tea Party. Then we'll look into the source of the Ryan family wealth, which comes from oil and gas extraction by hydraulic fracturing or fracking in the state of Oklahoma. Karen Webb, an Oklahoma-based journalist and regular contributor to the Oklahoma Observer, joins us to discuss how Paul Ryan's father-in-law, Dan Little, manages the family business for his nephew, Congressman Dan Boren, having signed 325 oil and gas leases between 2005 and 2011 for the family, who are heavily involved in fracking. Then finally, we will look into what is being done in the state of Pennsylvania to overcome voting restrictions that a Republican leader in the legislature boasted will deliver the state of Pennsylvania for Mitt Romney. Will Bunch, an award-winning senior writer with the Philadelphia Daily News, joins us to discuss how many of the million voters who have been suppressed will get their voting rights back before November. Joining us now is Jonathan Chait, who is a writer for the New York Magazine. He was previously a senior editor at the New Republic and a former assistant editor of the American Prospect. He's extensively profiled Congressman Paul Ryan for New York Magazine. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jonathan Chait.
Thank you.
And the tweet, you congratulated Paul Ryan. Did he tweet back and say, now he's Mr. Ryan?
Yeah, that's a story that I'd heard for a while, that a reporter who knew him well before he was a member of Congress congratulated him and said, congratulations, Paul, and he said, it's Mr. Ryan to you now, and apparently said this in all seriousness.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So do you think, though, that I take it that Mitt Romney chose him early August when he got back from his somewhat ill-fated trip to Europe, and that was apparently the first thing he decided when he got back was to pick Paul Ryan. Is this a case, though, since most of the conventional wisdom is that Romney's shoring up his right-wing base and Paul Ryan is the darling of the Tea Party, it would seem to me that if the candidate for the Republican Party is still spending his time shoring up his own base rather than reaching out to the center and to the moderates who basically decide American elections, wouldn't that suggest that he's in trouble?
Yeah, I think that conventional wisdom is at best half right. I don't think it's a gambit to shore up his right-wing base. I think Romney has all the enthusiasm he needs from conservatives. He has all the turnout, all the money he needs from conservatives. And I don't actually think that's what he's going for. I think what he's trying to do with Ryan is to shake up the game with some dramatic news-grabbing pick, number one. And Ryan is a major national political figure. Number two, I think he's trying to create a narrative in which Romney's campaign is substantive, focused on the issues, and Obama is wallowing in negative, nasty personal attacks. And Ryan is pretty far right substantively, but he's quite the master at creating an image of himself as completely earnest, uninterested in politics themselves, and just sort of a good guy in the emblem of all that high-minded substantive debate ought to be. Now, I think that image is largely, well, probably a word I can't use on the radio, but he's very, very good at that. So I think that's a big part of the pick.
Well, one of the strange things about politics is that perceptions seem to be everything, particularly on the right. I mean, Ronald Reagan was a divorced Hollywood actor, and he ran against a Christian lay preacher from Georgia, and yet the right-wing family values Christian right chose Reagan. And in this case, right, the Tea Party are choosing a guy to carry their mantle. And after all, Vice President Cheney said that he worships the ground that Paul Ryan walks on. This is a guy that voted for the TARP fund and voted for one of the huge boondoggles, which was a prescription drug benefit.
Right. I don't think that the Tea Party movement is fundamentally opposed to TARP. I mean, I think it's a strong issue amongst the activist base.
But isn't that how they started? Wasn't that the primary motivating factor to start the Tea Party, was the outrage over TARP?
Well, no, I think it was the outrage over Obama, just plain Obama. Uh-huh. I don't think you had these rallies and this movement back when the bailout passed. Otherwise, it never would have passed. And Ryan was as you say, a passionate advocate of it, and there was opposition, but no, the Tea Party is basically another name for the Republican base, and the Republican base is a partisan.
Well, how does he do it then, in the sense that he comes across and he's defined himself, as you have written, as a blue-collar, regular guy in the Reagan Democrat Joe the Plumber mold?
Right.
My understanding is that his family were quite well off, but mostly his wife's family are extremely well off
right.
in the oil and gas business. His
yep.
father-in-law handles all of the gas leases for the Boron family, including the congressman who's just quitting. They're huge in the fracking business.
Mm-hmm.
So how does he do it? I mean, we've already got essentially a 1%er at the top of the ticket,
yeah.
and yet this guy comes across as an average Joe.
Well, it's a skill. I mean, he's a skilled politician, and that's part of what skilled politicians do. George W. Bush was very, very good at this, right? I mean, he was the wealthy heir to a political dynasty who put himself forward to America as a rancher. You actually had people in the press saying that he was born on this ranch that he sort of bought for his campaign. You know, a pickup driving guy.
The virtual ranch, right?
That's a bit what Paul Ryan does, right? His image is all about bow hunting in Wisconsin, and very frequently described as coming from a blue collar town. Which is true that the town itself is blue collar, but his family is not. You could just as accurately say that Mitt Romney comes from the blue collar state of Michigan, but you know that's not an accurate way to think about Romney's background, and neither is it with Ryan.
Again, I'm speaking with Jonathan Chait, who is a writer for The New York Magazine, and he's previously a senior editor at The New Republic and a former assistant editor of The American Prospect, and he's extensively profiled Congressman Paul Ryan for New York Magazine. And, of course, we remember the footage of an angry voter collaring Newt Gingrich, saying, "You're an embarrassment. What you did to Paul Ryan was unforgivable," with Gingrich quivering. That is a kind of iconic moment for Ryan. And what do you think, though, about the Democrats' apparent and I think somewhat obvious line of attack against Ryan, which will be try to make him into a kind of right-wing bogeyman, like Clinton successfully did with Gingrich?
Right. Well, Ryan is much more politically talented than Gingrich. Gingrich was not likable. He didn't have political talent. Gingrich came from a strong Republican district where Republicans would always win and never really had to win over swing voters. Ryan is a different story. Ryan comes from a moderate district and has won strong support. So he's got real political talent. On the other hand, substantively, as that anecdote sort of suggests, Ryan is substantively to the right of Gingrich. Gingrich called Ryan's proposal, his budget plan, right-wing social engineering. It was far too radical for even Gingrich. But as the anecdote also suggests, that vision had become so central to the Republican Party's conception of what it ought to stand for that it was no longer possible to criticize Ryan in any terms whatsoever, and you would infuriate the base by doing so. So I think this suggests that anecdote is a very interesting one. I do have it in my New York Magazine story, and I think it tells us about how powerful Ryan has become within the Republican Party, how radical he is even compared to previous generations of radicals, and hints at his political talents.
Well, your article does get into the ideology, and what you've just told us, I think, is really central, isn't it? The extent to which this is a huge sea change for the Republicans, and they're going further to the right than under Goldwater in terms of this, particularly this kind of libertarian right-wing and Ayn Randian kind of notion that apparently informs Congressman Ryan. There's a great quote in your article in the New York Magazine, Jonathan Chait, of a letter that Ludwig von Mises wrote to Ayn Rand, basically summing up her philosophy, quoting, "You have the courage to tell the masses what no politician told them. You are inferior, and all the improvements in your conditions, which you simply take for granted, you owe to the efforts of men who are better than you."
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that's that makes Marie Antoinette look like a piker. I mean,
Rind isn't going to be using lines like that as a stump.
No.
But Rand really is a formative intellectual influence on Paul Ryan, and Ryan has said this repeatedly until fairly late in his political career, when he became high profile enough that this became a liability for him, and then he began to disavow his association with Rand, but really in a sort of lawyerly and weaselly way, where he would basically, you know, what he was really saying is that, well, she was an atheist and I'm not an atheist, so I'm not a follower of her philosophy in the sense of believing everything she says. But clearly, her moral economic worldview left a very deep imprint on Ryan's brain. And the core of that worldview is what I've described as a kind of inverted Marxism. It basically sees politics as an economic struggle between a virtuous class and a parasite class. The difference is that the classes are completely the opposite in Rand's view as Marx's worldview. In Rand's view, all good, all wealth, all progress comes from the efforts of the heroic rich, the business leaders, the innovators, the people who give us everything, and the parasites who live off their greatness are sort of the enemy class. And politics is a struggle to prevent these parasites from stealing and looting the wealth of the rich. And so in this worldview, progressive taxation and efforts by the government to redistribute wealth from the rich to the poor are the fundamental problem in politics and the fundamental thing that has to be stopped. And that is what Paul Ryan's career is all about.
But it's also what seems to be the developing theme of the Republican campaign, if not the obvious theme of the Republican campaign. There's no question that there are echoes of Reagan's notion of the welfare queens, that we have to take the handcuffs off the millionaires and put them on the welfare queens. This whole business about the way that they've completely misrepresented the Obama administration's waiver program for welfare is entirely designed to get white working class blue-collar people angry along the lines of what you just described.
I think that's right, and I think the reason they're doing that is that the sort of hardcore libertarian ideology in which Ryan is steeped doesn't have a real popular basis. People may oppose government in the abstract, but most of it they favor in the particular. Now, the exceptions to this, and this has really always been true, are government programs that they see as benefiting virtuous middle-class people like themselves. So Reagan, in the 60s, warned that the establishment of Medicare would lead to, you know, socialism and the end of freedom in America, and very much like people like Ryan warn about Obamacare. But by 1980, once the program had been established and once Reagan ran for president, it was no longer possible to do that. And so he had to isolate government programs that were seen in a different light, as seen as not benefiting the middle class, as benefiting poor people, people who hadn't, in the middle class's perception, you know, earned the right to be on the government dole. And so I think Romney has kind of started to reprise those themes.
Well, curious enough, in the photo op yesterday in Virginia with both candidates, Mitt Romney did talk about how Ryan will help elevate the debate, make it more bipartisan, talked about his bipartisan credentials, which I wonder how much that's to do with the fact that his wife's cousin is a Democrat. I mean, I know Ron Wyden joined him in one of his reform of healthcare plan, but the long and the short of it is that it seems that we do have a focus on the better angels of our nature that Romney mentioned. I find that hard to take, given that I recently spoke with Sister Simone Campbell, who took this caravan of nuns and went to the Janesville office of Congressman Ryan, and of course he wasn't there, but basically to confront him about what will happen with his Medicaid and Medicare reform that'll probably, by most measures, put another 30 million people without any health care coverage, which, of course, is the opposite trajectory of what Obama's trying to do with so-called Obamacare. So how can they do that? How can they appeal to the better angels of our nature and at the same time do the reverse of what these clearly Christian women who are doing the Lord's work see the picture as?
Well, it's how you define the better angels of our nature, I guess. You know, and the truth is, Ryan is, by all accounts, a very friendly, very personable guy. People get along with him. He speaks about politics in a very detailed way, although I think this leads to some confusion. He presents himself as a wonk, but he's not someone who's driven by numbers. He's someone who uses numbers to bolster his preconceived ideological notions, which are not subject to revision. So when Ryan has been warning for 3 years that we are on the precipice of mass hyperinflation, and despite the complete absence of any signs of this happening, he hasn't changed his underlying views with healthcare spending. He's claimed that Obamacare could not possibly bend the cost curve because it's government. Government doesn't work. Government is bureaucratic. Government must fail. Despite the fact that, you know, every advanced country in the world has both universal health insurance, more government control in their healthcare system than we do, and vastly lower healthcare costs. But in Ryan's mind, it's simply an ideological fact. Now, he can quote a lot of numbers to cite his view, but again, you know, these numbers all come from the kind of right-wing agitprop think tank universe, which doesn't operate by the kind of intellectual standards of academia or even a think tank like Brookings, which is more open to, you know, contrary evidence.
Well, of course, Mitt Romney recently in Israel mentioned that the Israeli national healthcare system gets healthcare costs down to 8% of GDP, whereas the United States is up to 18% of the GDP.
Right.
An odd endorsement of single payer, yeah, on the part. But isn't the subtext again, though, the idea that the deficit, they're trying to appeal to the average kind of blue-collar Joe the plumber by saying, you know, you're trying to pay your household bills and the government is just printing money and being profligate. But I think the subtext is the government's being profligate, propping up a bunch of parasites. Isn't that
That's absolutely right. Yeah, and I mean, and if you did want to point to a single issue, as we sort of mentioned before, that did spark this Tea Party rebellion, it was the notion floated by the Obama administration of doing something to help underwater homeowners. And Rick Santelli's rant on CNBC was sort of the moment that started where he proposed this Tea Party movement, was kind of the start of this, right? And he was saying, like, you are a virtuous homeowner, you've paid your bills, and why do you want to bail out these irresponsible homeowners who haven't? So that sentiment has always been at the root of it. And of course, that was a huge part of the opposition to the healthcare law. And they were attacking Obama for cutting Medicare, which he did, to finance universal healthcare. And so basically it was that idea. It was, we've paid our dues. This is a virtuous government program. This is a justified government program for people who deserve it, giving our money to people who don't deserve it, the people who don't have healthcare, who shouldn't be getting our help.
Well, just in closing, Jonathan Chait, of course, the conversation we're having is not about Romney's taxes, right? So
yeah.
To that extent, this is working, right?
Well, it is. But, you know, the gambit by Obama about talking about Romney's taxes and business history was always a setup. It was always the jab leading to the strike. And the strike was to tie him to the Ryan agenda. Now, they actually did focus groups earlier in the year, and they found basically that the substance of this agenda seemed so implausibly extreme to these undecided voters that they actually couldn't believe that someone like Romney would support it. So the purpose of this campaign was to define his character in such a way that those attacks would become believable, to paint him as this rich, self-interested man who only cared about other rich people, and then you could believe that he would support this agenda. So they're really escaping the jab, but they're really moving right into the haymaker punch. So on the other hand, like I said, they are bringing aboard a very, very talented politician to help sell it. So that's the asset. It's not all downside, but they're taking a huge risk by even more tightly embracing something which was, again, the ultimate focus of the Obama attack campaign.
Well, but how long do you think that they can get away with being both the arsonist and the fireman, in the sense that, you know, for example, as you point out in your article, the legendary Paul Ryan in the New York magazine, Jonathan Chait, that Grover Norquist said that nobody has done more in recent years to prevent the passage of the bipartisan debt agreement than Paul Ryan, who was on the Erskine Simpson-Bowles commission, and if he scuttled that, at least turned against it, and
right.
That leads you to the broader question, which is again a subtext which the Obama administration have never really enunciated, but I think it's pretty clear that the Republicans, just quoting Mitch McConnell, have an investment in destroying Obama, and the means by which they do that is making sure there's no economic recovery until the election.
Yeah, well, I should just briefly clarify that point. Norquist, in my New York Magazine article, didn't say that. What I said was that no one, with the possible exception of Norquist, had done more to scuttle
bipartisan agreements. I did misread it, yeah.
Yeah, with the possible exception of Norquist. And I'm not sure that's true. Norquist is known in the press as the guy who's been killing these agreements. Ryan, by contrast, is known as an advocate of these agreements. He goes around on television lambasting Obama for not more fully supporting the Simpson-Bowles bipartisan deficit agreement, even though Ryan voted against that agreement and it scuttled several other attempts to reach bipartisan agreements. Because Ryan, you know, is not a bipartisan. You know, he's not in his party center, and he's not really a deal maker. So it's a pretty astonishing feat of spin that he's managed to create this image for himself.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Jonathan Chait, who's a writer for The New York Magazine. He previously was a senior editor at The New Republic and a former assistant editor of The American Prospect. He's extensively profiled Congressman Paul Ryan for New York Magazine. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about the source of the Paul Ryan family's money, which comes from fracking in Oklahoma.
Every crack, anybody wanna tell it like it is to each other, like you would to a sister or a brother. Cut this out, cosmopolitan style.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Karen Webb, who's an Oklahoma-based journalist and regular contributor to the Oklahoma Observer, where she just wrote the article, Atlas Shrugged, Jesus Wept. Welcome to Background Briefing, Karen Webb.
Hi.
So just to touch on your very amusing article at the Oklahoma Observer, Atlas Shrugged, Jesus Wept, one of the lines from it is, in reference to Mitt Romney choosing Paul Ryan, you say the evangelical Christians have decided to back the Joseph Smith and Rand ticket. Is that the way you see it?
Yes, if you're looking at it from a religious point of view.
So tell us about what's going on in your state, because I just was looking into the source of the wealth of the Paul Ryan family, and particularly his family's wealth, and it quickly became apparent that most of it comes from Oklahoma via his wife, Jenna Little. And the reason that this is important, and not that there's anything wrong with being wealthy in the United States, but Paul Ryan, of course, has developed this persona as a regular guy, an average blue-collar type American, and he's And Romney, of course, is somewhat tied to the 1% from which he comes, it turns out that there's a considerable family wealth there, and it's derived from this extremely controversial procedure called fracking, hydraulic fracturing for oil and gas.
Yes. I was just looking into the connection with Dan Warren, and of course his wealth has gone up a huge amount since 2005. But on the, I haven't found a connection specifically to fracking, but his stepfather owns Robbins Petroleum Company out of Lufkin, Texas, which is right in the middle of where all their little earthquakes have been happening that they believe are connected to fracking. I haven't seen anything specific about that. But Dan Little, who is Paul Ryan's father-in-law, owns an oil company out of Medill, Oklahoma. And his family is terribly interesting. I just found out today from the Oklahoman, which is definitely will be pro-fracking, pro-Dan Bourne, pro-all of that. that her grandfather was Rural W. Little, and he was responsible for helping create the third party, American Party, in Oklahoma in 1967 to get George Wallace on the ballot. I don't know if you're familiar with any of that. And then he ran for governor, too. Her grandfather ran for governor but lost. But I've just been looking at this today because I had no idea there was a connection between Dan Boren and Paul Ryan in a family situation.
Well, Dan Boren is the congressman from Oklahoma.
He is listed as a Democrat.
Right.
He's listed. You wouldn't really know that from looking at his voting record. But.
Right, and he serves as the co-chairman of the House Natural Gas Caucus, and he has assiduously worked to block any move by federal regulators to restrain the drilling and efforts by the Obama administration to curtail tax benefits for the oil and gas industries. He is the son of former Oklahoma Senator David Boren, now head of Oklahoma University. Dan Boren is, of course, his uncle, Dan Little, controls the family business, the oil leases. And, of course, Dan Little is the father-in-law of Paul Ryan. Dan Boren, the congressman, so-called Democrat, was among 41 House Democrats who joined Republicans in 2005 to pass legislation to prohibit the federal government from regulating fracking under the Safe Water Drinking Act. And my understanding is that the leases that were signed, that the family, through Paul Ryan's father-in-law, the 325 oil and gas leases on thousands of acres in Oklahoma are designed to do fracking, and that they have made a deal with the biggest fracking company in the country, Chesapeake Energy, which is also...
Chesapeake is under investigation, as I understand it.
It is under investigation.
Specifically for fracking, but I know they're under investigation because they've had stories about that here in Oklahoma.
They are, in fact, that's pretty much what they do, is fracking.
That's correct.
Chesapeake Energy, of course, is the top donor to Congressman Dan Boren's campaign. And again, he and Jenna Little are first cousins, and they share in the family wealth. What's your understanding of why Boren, the congressman, decided to quit?
Well, I don't know. The story originally said that he was going to take over and be president of one of the colleges in eastern Oklahoma, where he's from. I don't recall right now which one. However, now they're saying that he may be going to run for governor. And in this article in the Times, it said that he was going to come back and probably work in the private industry and the oil industry. Now, I don't know when it changed from being the president of a college to the petroleum industry. I haven't found the connection on that yet at all. But, I did appreciate his comment in the paper about that it's the same if your family's in the lumber business, and that it's not any connection. There's no conflict there, except for the fact that when they cut down trees, it doesn't necessarily cause earthquakes. And Oklahoma's had a bunch. And last year, there's normally about 50 that are recordable, and only a few of those will be felt. Last year, there were 43 that were felt, including two of them by me, and I had never felt any before. But and they've been trying to investigate it here. However, we do have a problem. The newspaper, The Oklahoman, is it's pro-oil and gas from the word go. I checked their website today. They don't have any comments on this New York Times article. I'm anxious to see what they come of it. The Tulsa newspaper hasn't said very much about the connection between Ryan and Oklahoma, even. But it's the Tulsa world is a little more liberal than the Oklahoman, but we suffer from information, lack of information in Oklahoma, because everything is owned by the oil and gas industry. So we're kind of...
Well, you do your best to Karen Webb, again, Oklahoma-based journalist and regular contributor, to the Oklahoma Observer, where she just wrote the article, Atlas Shrugged, Jesus Wept, which is about the choice of Paul Ryan to be the vice presidential nominee under the Republican ticket with Mitt Romney. What's it like... being a liberal, what are you, a liberal muckraker? How would you describe yourself?
A muckraker or whatever? Is that the word you're trying to come up with?
No, that used to be an honorable business. I mean, Ida Tarbell was the great journalist who discovered investigative journalism and broke
I can tell you that the best one here is named Frosty Troy.
Uh-huh.
And he still does editorials in the Oklahoma Observer, and he speaks all over the United States and everything. But it is kind of rough here because everything's from the same organizations. It's like you very rarely hear a liberal side of anything in Oklahoma. It doesn't matter what you're talking about, the news, the newspapers. It's a very unusual thing. Now, Oklahoma used to be very democratic, very. And now it's gone completely on the other side. I don't think there's any...
I
keep hoping it'll get better, but we keep getting people. If we get people in Congress, they're nearly always like Dan Boren.
Which are the tools of the oil and gas industry.
Yes, definitely. Either that or now some of the ones on the Republican side are actually probably more controlled by the evangelical Christian community.
I see.
Langford. I was reading where he had this this panel discussion in Edmond about fracking specifically, and there was not anyone on his investigative committee that was against fracking. No one. All of them were for. There are people I noticed where there was a man who was filing suit in Oklahoma with having oil and gas coming up in his groundwater and having a dead zone in his wheat field because of it coming up. And that's where most of the complaints have been, is because it does come back up. If everything's not exactly right, it comes up through the ground, because all they do is take all that stuff and pump it into the ground. There's not like a tank of some kind they put it in. They just put it into the ground, and then it comes back up. And here... Oh, gosh, every ad you see on TV comes from the petroleum people about how they're keeping everything so clean, all of it. There's just not any pollution in Oklahoma. There was a deal, I can't remember the exact name of the town, but it's somewhere over way in the northeastern part of Oklahoma, and they had a huge problem. They have had the entire town has had to leave because of the oil industry and the pollution that's there. And Dan Boren and Jim Inhofe, none of them came out against anything that was happening for the most part. It was like, so what if there's this big, huge tar pit here? And everybody had to move. The entire town nearly is gone now because of that. And he didn't appear to be very upset about it. Now, he didn't get, decide why is this happening here. It was just something that just happens, I guess, because he's not very, I don't ever remember him coming out on any issue against the oil and gas industry, ever. Now, I don't know, I haven't heard Paul Ryan talk too much about it, but I don't expect he's a whole lot different, because he probably gets quite a bit of money from it too. Now Boren claims that, kind of like Romney does, that he doesn't have anything to do with selling the oil leases. Yeah. He doesn't have anything to do with deciding where they do it or anything, none of that.
Right, but he leaves that up to
a lot of money. Huh?
He leaves that up to his uncle.
Yeah.
Who is Dan Little, who is the father-in-law of Paul Ryan. So he's the guy that actually runs the family business and signs all of these oil and gas leases for the purposes of fracking. So that's the part of it. You would think that at some point or other, the people who in this country that are concerned about fracking would be able to put two and two together.
I found an interesting remark by the representative that represents my district is Tom Cole. Now, he's not one of the most outspoken Oklahoma congressmen, but he remarked that he went on a congressional traveling trip with Paul and Jenna Ryan, and he said it was they were just wonderful. It was like traveling with a president and his wife, is what he said. He also made an interesting comment that Paul Ryan and Dan Boren are responsible for killing half the game in Oklahoma. They like hunting. But everything here is coming out extremely positive about Ryan being on the ticket, which doesn't surprise me. I mean, there is no other voice in Oklahoma. The Oklahoma Observer is the only other voice that I know of. There aren't any commentators in Oklahoma that do any kind of interviews with people. Well, I take that back. There's a couple on the radio. But there's not anything on television.
Well, again, I'm speaking with Karen Webb, who is an Oklahoma-based journalist and regular contributor to the Oklahoma Observer, where she just wrote the article, Atlas Shrugged, Jesus Wept. And we're talking about the source of the wealth of the Paul Ryan family, largely through his wife, Jenna, whose father, Dan Little, runs the family oil business for his nephew, who is the Democratic congressman, Dan Boren, whose father was the Democratic senator of the state of Oklahoma, David Boren. Dan Boren is stepping down. He has been a huge defender of the oil and gas business as co-chairman of the House Natural Gas Caucus. He has blocked any move on the part of federal regulators to restrain the drilling and fracking, he has also restrained efforts of the Obama administration to curtail tax benefits for oil and gas industries, and has joined with the Republicans to make sure that the fracking is not prohibited under the Safe Water Drinking Act. So that's a summary. Just in closing, Karen Webb, I guess what you should do, if you can, is just keep me posted on what's happening at a local level and who I can talk to further about the first family in fracking here. The Ryan family.
Well, they had a good one would be Frosty Troy.
Right.
And I have a couple of other friends who do a whole lot in the area of environmental.
Good. Well, let's stay in touch, and I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Oh, sure. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Again, I've been speaking with Karen Webb, who's an Oklahoma-based journalist and regular contributor to the Oklahoma Observer, where she just wrote the article, Atlas Shrugged, Jesus Wept. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about what's happening in the state of Pennsylvania to overcome the fact that 1 million likely Democratic voters have been denied the vote. Thank you.
don't need to change.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Will Bunch, who's an award-winning senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News and a senior fellow with Media Matters for America. He blogs at attitude.com and is the author of Tear Down This Myth, The Right-Wing Distortions of the Reagan Legacy. And his latest book is The Backlash, Right-Wing Radicals, High-Def Hucksters, and Paranoid Politics in the Age of Obama. Welcome to Background Briefing, Will Bunch.
Hi, Ian. Good to be back on again. Thanks.
Thank you. And your state of Pennsylvania, 1 million people have been struck from the rolls. This is an extraordinary time in for American democracy when millions of Americans who want to vote Democrat, who've voted before, and who are eligible voters, have to jump through hoops to prove who they are, whereas billionaires who are buying the elections for the Republicans don't have to identify who they are. It's an extraordinary turn of events. What is being done in the state of Pennsylvania to push back against, notwithstanding the White House's lawsuit, but what's being done on the ground to get these million voters their rights back?
Right. Well, I mean, a few things are happening. I mean, I think the easiest and most promising path of success is the one that's being undertaken in the court system right now. The ACLU of Pennsylvania, along with some plaintiffs, for example, a woman who is, gosh, I don't have that in front of me, either her late 80s or early 90s, who's voted in every election for the last half century, but has identification card problems that are very complicated, and a few other individual plaintiffs are suing the state. It just seems on its face that this move is a violation of the state constitution, which, among other things, calls for, you know, make it easy and free for people to vote and participate in elections. So I think they have a decent chance of prevailing in the court system. Now, of course, in Pennsylvania, ultimately it could be challenged all the way to the Supreme Court. Now, I don't know how if it would be fast-tracked or how that would work, but obviously the chances at the Supreme Court in Washington with that current makeup aren't as good. Now, that's one thing. I mean, there are a couple other things that are happening, though, too. I mean, obviously, people have to prepare for the worst, as it were. So you do have a number of various community and activist groups, the NAACP and other groups are doing everything they can to identify who these voters are who lack identification and, if so, to try and, help them through the process to make sure that they have the type of ID that they'll be able to take at the polls. I mean, I think those are the two kind of main fronts you're seeing progress on, hopefully. And like I said, most of us hope that it's plan A and that the law just gets thrown out and never goes to plan B.
Well, there's no question about the partisan nature of the law, because the architect of the law, who's the top Republican in the legislature in the state of Pennsylvania, boasted, and he's on camera, they play the clip often, that the new voter ID laws that he pushed through, quoting him, will deliver the state of Pennsylvania to Mitt Romney.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's really incredible the way it's played out in that those of us who've been warning about this from day one and how terrible it would be, I mean, we've seen a couple things. I mean, we've seen that statement from Mike Terzai, who's one of the top Republican legislators, making it pretty plain that the intent of this is what we said it was all along, to help Republicans win an election. The other thing that's incredible is with this court case is the state even stipulated that it had no evidence to present of an existing problem with voter fraud. In other words, normally if you're being sued, they say, well, this law is necessary because look at all the voter fraud that's taken place. I mean, they didn't come in. Not only did they not come in with a case, I mean, they actually stipulated in a document that they weren't going to present that kind of evidence. So I mean, the events of the last couple months have just shown this to be exactly what critics have said it is, which is just a pure partisan, undemocratic scam to help the Republicans win an election.
Now, in terms of tear down this myth, the right-wing distortion of the Reagan legacy,
yes.
We have now, with the addition of Paul Ryan on the ticket, the Mitt Romney-Ryan, the R&R ticket, you have a tremendous reactionary deviation of the history of the Republican Party. I don't think it's ever had anybody on the ticket, certainly. Goldwater doesn't even begin to be as radical as Paul Ryan is in terms of his right-wing and libertarian bent. But both of them on the stump are basically saying things like, we're going to appeal to bipartisanship, we're going to appeal to the better angels of our nature. I find this extraordinary that this party that has been characterizing Obama from day one as a Muslim and an imposter and a terrorist coddler and sympathizer has this ability to suggest that they want to rise above the nasty nature of the politics. They're the ones that created the nasty nature of our politics. Also, I mean, I just was looking at a film clip of the governor of Wisconsin, the controversial Scott Walker, with a sort of turban over his head at a prayer meeting in the Sikh temple that was attacked by a psychotic with a gun. The reason that psychotic Nazi had a gun that was concealed is that Scott Walker signed into law the concealed weapon ban bill in the state of Wisconsin. So I just can't understand how there is this. They're not called out on this extraordinary hypocrisy.
Right. Well, there was just so much hypocrisy in what you just said. I don't know where to start to respond, but I would say the one thing, like you said, I was flabbergasted because although I just got back from vacation, but I did take a few minutes out. I did happen to catch Paul Ryan's announcement yesterday in his little speech and Romney's speech preceding that. And, you know, the nerve of Mitt Romney to basically accuse Obama of making these cuts in Medicaid and, we're going to be the ones to protect Medicaid. As he's introducing Paul Ryan, the author of this plan, which would severely reduce Medicaid and basically Medicare as we know it. If that doesn't meet the definition of Orwellian, I don't know what does. I mean, it was clear double speak, double think, or whatever you want to call it. It was crazy. And it's a good point that you mentioned Reagan, because when you go back 30 years to what Reagan was and what he did, and obviously he did a lot of things that you and I and a lot of listeners probably disagree with, absolutely. But he did do this. I mean, he did fight to save Social Security. In fact, he was even willing to sign off on a payroll tax increase to make sure that Social Security was funded. And he believed in the safety net. In fact, one of the reasons that he had a falling out with David Stockman, his budget chief, was because he didn't want to sign on to some of these more radical plans that would have cut Medicare or Medicaid or Social Security. So, that's how far the party, or quote, the party of Reagan is unquote, has gone from Reagan in just 30 years. It's really stunning to watch. And, I could be wrong. I've been wrong about things in the past. But I think the voters, if they have any level of knowledge or education about what the Ryan plan is, or what Ryan and Romney would do if they're actually elected president, I think a majority of Americans are going to reject that plan. I guess it's up to the Democrats and up to others and people in the media to make sure we have an informed electorate and who know what the real choice is. But there's a clear choice in this election.
But isn't that, Will Bunch, isn't it fundamental, though, when you talk about the use of the word electorate? Well, what about the mechanics of democracy? What about all of this, these platitudes that we recite, from kindergarten on about the great American democracy and we hold these truths to be self-evident and all this stuff? When the very machinery of democracy is being tampered with in such brazen ways, for example, in the state of Ohio, the key swing state, You have the Republican legislature there just passed a law allowing the Republican precincts in that state to stay open 2 hours longer than the Democratic precincts. Now, they're not even trying to disguise the outrageous partisan nature of this voter suppression so that they get elected in this swing state. And they're doing the same in your state, Pennsylvania. So,
right. No, they're not. They're not. I mean, I guess they're counting on, because a lot of things have happened over the last 20, 25, 30 years, and they've seen the American people not get outraged about some of the things that they have been able to get away with. And, you know, it's human nature, right? The more you get away with, the more brazen you get in your next scheme. And here that's what exactly what we're seeing. You know, we're seeing them saying, why can't we get away with this voting scheme? I mean, it really is appalling what's going on. I just got back to Philadelphia from a trip and included a couple days in Memphis where I revisited the Civil Rights Museum where Martin Luther King was assassinated. And, you know, I'm looking at these exhibits and just the remarkable struggle that was undertaken up through the 50s and the 60s to get basic voting rights, you know, for African Americans and for other minorities in this country. And the fact that we're going through this, you know, 45 years later, it just boggles the mind. I mean, that this is still a problem. I mean, obviously, we've taken two steps up, but why take this one step back now? Why? I mean, we should always be moving forward. We shouldn't be taking any steps back. It's crazy.
Well, it's crazy, but it's also insulting that you've got the candidate on the Republican side posing himself as this sort of moral family man with good values. There's been a lot of questions about his business practices, and the fact that he won't release his taxes can only tell you one of two things: either he's hiding something, or he's incredibly arrogant. That he thinks he's above the average American, that he doesn't have to stoop to the level of ordinary folk and have minimum scrutiny. After all, he is running to become president of the United States. It's again, I'm just astounded by the brazen nature of the continual lies. It's not the big lie. Everything that this candidate Romney has done from day one, his first ad that he ran in the Iowa caucuses against Obama, where he put John McCain's words in Obama's mouth when Obama was quoting John McCain. That was stooping to the lowest level in terms of lies and manipulation. But he has continued to lie and manipulate every statement. All of their campaign ads have been distortions of what Obama has said, including the latest about waivers in healthcare. That's the part of it that I find extraordinary. And it is.
It's very discouraging that somebody can. You know, every time I watch a Romney, like when he won some of these primaries, and I would watch his 10 or 15 minute victory speech. And there would just be, you know, sentence number one is a lie. Sentence number two is a lie. You know, Obama apologized overseas. You know, he wants European style socialism, and just on and on. And it's like it's almost like if every time you give a speech, there's just so many lies in one speech that people are just overwhelmed. They just throw their hands up, and it's like, what are you going to do? You know, and it is frustrating. The one thing maybe I'm not quite. Maybe you're a little bit more pessimistic than I am, but I do think, I think when you look at the situation, obviously, unemployment is still unacceptably high in this country. And normally, in past times, when we've seen that condition, it's been terrible news for the incumbent. And instead, what we're seeing is, you know, it's going to be close, but we're seeing right now a very narrow lead for President Obama. And I think enough voters, and I wish it were more, obviously, but I think enough voters are seeing this fundamental level of dishonesty, and enough voters are asking, you know, well, how come he's not releasing his tax returns? Why is he being so secretive? I think, it's not as much as we'd like, but I think enough voters are seeing that there's just something inauthentic and not right about Mitt Romney, and I think that's the reason why you see the president with a lead, even though unemployment is at 8.3%. So we'll have to see how it plays out between now and November. Hopefully, again, they say no one ever went broke underestimating the American people, but hopefully maybe we are underestimating the American people, and maybe enough people will realize that they're being misinformed and misled by one party.
Well, just in closing, Will Bunch, again, award-winning senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News and senior writer with the Media Matters for America, just back to the voter suppression in the state of Pennsylvania, where essentially a million people have been struck off the rolls, and you mentioned the ACLU court case involving the elderly woman who's voted all of her life and now can't vote because she doesn't have the right ID. It would seem that I know that there are some groups on the ground, the North Philadelphia Coalition and Votes for Homes, right, and others that are organizing along these lines. Is there any evidence that the Democratic Party itself, after all, they're the ones whose voters are being denied the vote. Do they appear to have a ground game here in Pennsylvania?
No, it's unfortunate because I think I think we have a weakened party system in Pennsylvania, as in a lot of states, and so. I haven't seen a huge Democratic Party gear up. Now, we do have, and Philadelphia still has the very old-fashioned ward leader system, and that'll help, I'm sure. And, I think you know how politics are these days. There's a lot of money for field operations, but it all goes to the Obama operation and how prepared or geared up the Obama administration or the Obama campaign, is, for handling this kind of a problem. I don't know. I mean, I think... obviously you look at these names and they're smaller community-based groups and not the big groups. But I wouldn't be so pessimistic. I mean, I think those are the groups that you want to see involved because while they're small, they're in the neighborhoods. They know where the people are at and how to find them and how to hopefully motivate people in their own community. So this is plan B. I mean, plan A is obviously just getting rid of the law, which obviously can't happen legislatively at this point, but could happen in the court system. And plan B is if you have to live under this law, how do you get as many people out to the polls to vote? Because that's what it's all about in this country, trying to get people to vote. And if you can't do it the right way, you'll have to do it this way.
Well, thank you very much for joining us here today, Will Bunch.
All right, Ian, thanks again. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Will Bunch, who is an award-winning senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News and a senior fellow with Media Matters for America. He blogs at attitude.com. He's the author of Tear Down This Myth, The Right-Wing Distortion of the Reagan Legacy. And his latest book is The Backlash, Right-Wing Radicals, High-Def Hucksters, and Paranoid Politics in the Age of Obama. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.